Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Diversity Advantage podcast. And today we have Jennifer Wheeler, who is an expert in helping people connect with the culture of the organization that drives retention, that drives profits, and drives engagement. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Superb. The question is, you know, it makes sense, but why do so many organizations do it badly?
Do D&I badly? I think a lot of organizations forget that D&I is more than race and gender. It's more than, you know, having a certain mix within your organization. I mean, we've had a lot of pushback, especially I'm in Texas. And so there's been a tremendous amount of DEI pushback from our government, from our governors and the leadership against DEI programs. In fact, they've banned them all from all state agencies and higher education. So there is no more, you know, acknowledgement of D&I or DEIB. So, you know, I think part of the reason is that they're just not, at least for here, right? They're just not looking at what it is, and it's what it isn't, right? What it is and what it isn't. So it isn't meant to create more discrimination. And if you are discriminating more than you were, you're doing it so wrong. It's so wrong, because really all we're asking for with D&I in integrating it in an organization is to just look around and say, who's not here? Who are we not hearing from? Whose voices are not present at our collective table? And making efforts to bring those people into your organization. And then once they get there, continuing to be intentionally inclusive. I really think if we focused more on the aspects of inclusivity, the D, the E, the B would begin to follow. Because really it is about making people feel like, and walking the walk and talking the talk in the feel like, they actually matter to and in your organization.
So I think at the end of the day, we are selfish human beings. And part of social engineering is, you know, if there's a reason for me to shovel my sidewalk, that's a benefit for me, I'm going to do it. If it's mandated, it's something I'm not going to do. So what is the financial incentive? I'm not talking about government subsidies, but when you have people that have different ideas that are committed to the cause, you get better ideas and you get a more nimble organization. So what data is out there that actually goes to a CEO that says, look, if you want to be more profitable, do this, because then they'll go, holy crap, I need to get this done.
Right. Well, there's actually a lot of studies that are out there, and they've been done by some very, you know, reputable organizations. Gallup does a lot of studies. You know, Harvard Business Review does studies. There are so many. McKinsey, like, there's a lot of people out there that do studies and collect research, and the research is there. Because if you just think about what, I'll go with, you know, America, which is indicative of a lot of countries around the world. What do we look like as a country? Who is in our country? What underrepresented groups are, you know, people in our country affiliated with? Well, those people are your potential customers and employees. So if you're not thinking about the needs, the voices, the experiences, the lived experience of your potential employees and customers, you are excluding people who would be very valuable for your organization or potential customers, because people want to see themselves reflected in whatever it is that you are putting out there. So for organizations who have, it's like retail organizations who are now including just a variety of models in their advertising, right? You see now people are putting more mixed race couples in advertising. They are showing LGBTQ couples in advertising. They're including, you know, people who have obvious physical disabilities and various sizes, right? So we're not just promoting this one idealized version. And people want to see themselves in your organization and in your product or service. And so you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not thinking about the people that you could potentially serve. So many organizations have really been able not only to get a much more innovative, well-qualified, because no one is saying that diversity, equity, inclusion means you don't hire the most qualified people. You still hire the most qualified people. You just expand your labor pool or your interview pool so that you have a better opportunity of getting the most qualified person. And so, you know, that's where it comes from. You get better employees, they're more engaged, they're more committed, and then you also are showing your customers that you are committed to recognizing their individual needs and experiences. And of course, we can't create specific things for one single person. That's crazy. But you know, as a former teacher, I was tasked with, you know, meeting my students where they are and making sure I was providing ways for them to be successful. And I don't think that's much different when you're thinking about D&I. You got to meet your organization where you are and then figure out where do you want to go and how are you going to get there. And there's a lot of data and strategies about the benefits of D&I and just all kinds of...
All right, so give me an example of a company that was not practicing it. They started practicing it. It probably took a little while for them to get to where they need to be, and it led to a new promised land. Do you have one at your fingertips right now that you can think about specifically?
Well, I mean, the one I'll go to right off the top of my head is Apple, for example. Apple, as an organization, is what the most profitable company in the entire world. They have, you know, they have quite a handle on their market. And a lot of their success comes to the fact they are very committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion. They are an ESG organization, which is environmental, you know, societal, and governmental. And so they are an incredibly active and committed partner to DEIB. And I think it does impact their ability to innovate, their ability to create products that people want. They provide customer service in I don't even know how many languages. So, you know, that's an aspect of diversity and inclusion is providing your content in multiple languages. So people think it's all about these weird and crazy factors, but in reality, making sure your website is accessible, that someone who is blind, that their reader can read it, that you've provided ASL services like sign language in your video calls. And those are all things that Apple has been doing and do. I mean, it's just a multitude of things, right? So when you come into their store, their tables are at a height where a person in a wheelchair could access, right? So it's not just about it's not just about the idea that we've got, which is, I mean, yes, it's to prevent discrimination, but at the same time, it's to provide accessibility, right? The more people that can access your products and services, the more people are going to buy them. So yes, you've got the representation piece, but at the same time, we're talking about, you know, it's not just representative to see a person in a wheelchair in your ad, but accessibility is that person also can get what they need if they come into your store, if they come to your office, if they access your website. I see a lot more companies now who are saying, you know, as they're doing their advertising for jobs, their job descriptions say, if you need accommodations, if you need something from us to help you better navigate the application process or the interview process, please reach out to us so we can accommodate you. All of those things are part of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging initiatives. It is not just singularly looking around and saying, do we have enough of, you know, this shade? Do we have enough women? It's not exclusively that. And I think that's where a lot of people get caught up and where a lot of people make mistakes in how they're addressing diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I would really, and Apple has loads of employee resource groups. I mean, they have a full-on D&I department. It is not, you know, unfortunately, a lot of organizations, you may have someone in HR who's also doing the D&I stuff, and it's just one person trying to do this for a big group. And I think the fact that they have resources, both human and financial, assigned to this, is making a big difference. I mean, they are making, I mean, they're the most successful company currently.
Right.
Trillions of dollars. It's ridiculously crazy.
So 2 points. One, I was listening to a producer of TV programs, very successful. And they said, you know, if they got a particular show that's really popular and there's not enough Asian Americans watching it, next season they'll bring an Asian American cast member on and that'll open up that market. So this human need to find connection. So, you know, it kind of really backs up that point of when you have a diverse workforce, you appeal to a lot of people. The second thing is there's a battleship called the USS Benfold, and it was in total disarray. New skipper comes in and they basically going from one of the worst ships in the Navy to the best ship in the Navy. And one of the things they do is they send out birthday wishes. So let's say, Jennifer, your son was in the Navy on that boat, that you would get a card on his birthday as well. So you're at home connecting you. And just did small things like that to really connect the group. But other ships went, wait a minute, they can do it. We can do it too. And so one of the executions one of the ships did was this. On one day, they sent out birthday cards for everybody on the ship to the family members, but not on their birthday. So it was trying to execute a really important plan, but mis-executing. Mm-hmm. So there's probably organizations that have the best intention in heart to do it well, or we need this. We want to check off the box that we're doing this. So what are 5 mistakes that organizations make when they're starting to come into this program where they kind of lose sight? What are things to avoid when you launch one of these programs?
Well, one thing I would say is manage your expectations, because if you are not doing anything intentional around D&I initiatives, then you have to, I mean, dream big, but be realistic about what you can actually execute and implement, because lack of success is definitely an obstacle, right? If you can't recognize, if you don't see tangible results, if you're not seeing progress. So I think you have to be realistic in what the goals are, right? So
hold
think about what you're...
Hold that thought. Expectations, love it. I just want to add one thing to it, that you should set your expectations for your employees as well. Hey, we're doing this new program. This is what it's going to be like. There's a really good chance we're going to actually have a couple of stumbles. Stick with this. And so setting their expectations as well is crucial. So yeah, so setting expectations, yes. What's number two?
I think you've got to prepare people for change. So a lot of times organizations begin to implement these types of strategies, but they have not done anything around change management, because you have to prepare people for change, good change or bad change. Many, many people are oppositional.
Scare the crap out of people.
And yeah. So you know, I was a teacher for many years before moving into consulting work. I've worked in businesses and education. And, you know, almost every year we would get a new software program. Well, you just show up on the first day and they say, oh, here's a new software program. We are going to do a whole day of professional development on Thursday. And you're expected to be an expert at it, you know, by the time the kids come, and you've got like maybe 2 weeks plus about 10,000 other things to do besides learn this program. Nobody gave you nobody created space for you to execute and really adapt to this change. You just basically said, here, go do it. And that is a huge mistake, because people need to be prepared. And I think in this current climate where talking about white privilege is automatically putting certain people on, you know, guard, or if you say bias, people immediately get defensive. But it's just a conversation. No one's accusing anyone of anything. So I think we have to talk about, make sure our expectations are realistic. We've got to help people navigate and manage this change before it is implemented. You've got to start talking about just little things, small, tiny things, getting people prepared to manage change. And in fact, you should be talking about change management in your organization all the time, exclusive of anything else, because it really is the catalyst for anything that you want to do. I am married to a lean sensei, master black belt sensei, whatever. So we talk about change management a lot here and how it affects
anything. Awesome. Hold that thought. Keep on talking. I'm gonna let the dog in.
Oh, absolutely. So you got to get people ready for what you want to do. And I think you want to prepare people around D&I conversations to say, this is not, we're not saying you're bad people. We're saying this is what exists. This is what we want to do about it. We want to be a partner in creating change in both our organization and perhaps be a role model for other people in our industry, right? You got to also help people understand why you want to do it. Like, why is this now important?
Understand it. And also, what's the benefit for you, Mr. or Miss Employee? It's like, this will allow us to expand, it'll allow us to grow, it'll be faster, all that stuff. Explain that. The other thing I think that people need to do is to intentionally plan to fail. We want this diversity thing to blow up in our faces and actually look at that from that lens and go, oh, this could actually cause failure, and then make allowances before you start. So it's not all roses, but really, because sometimes when you go, well, could fail, that's a different thing than let's intentionally make it fail. Then you actually, problems crop up before you have to actually execute. So what's number three?
So that's number three for you?
I was just adding commentary on yours. So number three for you.
So let's see, number three for me, what else? I mean, I think you need to provide education and resources that meet people where they are, right? You've got people who are in various places in their own personal DEI journey. Like for me, for example, I was interested in D&I way, way before I ever got really involved because I was a teacher. I had students in my class from diverse backgrounds, very multicultural. I had children who had various, learning disabilities, physical, all of it, like all the different things. And so it was important to me to educate myself and so that I could be a better teacher, that I could be a better parental partner. And so I think we also have to figure out where people are in their own personal journeys and tap into that. And people who are perhaps a little bit more down the road in their journey, a little bit more evolved, can help you lead what you're doing.
So give me an example of, you said, resources. What could be give me an example of a resource that we can empower our employees with as we bring these programs in.
Well, there's lots of organizations that people can join, first of all, that, there's all kinds of different organizations. I'm a member of the Society for Diversity. They provide education, resources. There's all kinds of things. LinkedIn has loads and loads of resources. I provide resources. There's a lot of things out there.
Give me an example of one.
Well, there's a lot of books. I mean, I'm not thinking of like one specific thing off the top of my head. I personally got a certified diversity professional program. I went through a program so that I could be more educated and more capable of helping people meet them where they are in whatever their D&I initiatives are. So I'm a big advocate of education. So within an organization, provide training, right? Don't just say we're doing this, or don't just say, hey, we're making everyone come to this training and it's all going to be solved. You have to integrate education in the overall plan. And there are so many resources out there. I mean, honestly, if you just started Googling, you would find a lot of things. But there's many experts on LinkedIn. There's many people who write about this, who write blogs and articles. So you can start there just on your own personal education journey. There's a lot of great books. I love to read books by multicultural authors and, authors that don't look like me, or we don't have the same lived experience, so I can learn. There's just plenty of ways that you can do that. So definitely education and training and providing resources, right? Just even creating a database of links and articles for your employees to access, without saying you must read this and we must have a conversation about it on Friday. That's, I think mandating it is somewhat of a mistake. I mean, you want people to be engaged with this because they have connected to it and they see the value and they understand why you're doing it in your organization. It's really, and it's not exclusive about making people feel good, but it is also many benefits business wise. And, so I would say that right? So education, another way to make it work is.
So I'll add one to the mix. I'll add one to the mix while you're thinking about that one. Certainly, I think doing role playing is really, really important. And also, you know, person A says this, person B is there, and then you got somebody else saying, this is what person B is hearing because of the cultural differences. So you guys are actually talking about the same thing, but talking about it differently. And I think those examples, sometimes people go, oh, I had no idea that this was what they were receiving. And I think just that kind of stuff brings insight. One of the things that I've seen is the multicultural calendar. And the first time I saw it, it was like, oh, that's really nice. And I didn't actually pay a lot of attention to it. But as I started handing it out as gifts, people would actually call me up and go, oh, my God, that is so brilliant. Right. And Saturday evening, I was looking at that because you get to understand, you know, what's happening in the Jewish faith. Why do they have this holiday? And then you've got, you know, eight of the largest religions in the world. And instead of turning people off, what it does is it fascinates people to now I finally understand one of my coworkers, and I'm not going to have a meeting on this day because it's one of their holy days. We'll just do it on Wednesday instead. And it just brings understanding and insight to everyone.
Yeah, I think part of it is just recognizing that people are different, but yet at the same time, we're still humans with who need certain things at the core. So if you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right, you've got basic food, water, shelter. And then as you move up the pyramid, safety and belonging is what people must have in order to move up to the next levels and truly realize their greatest potential. So by not creating an inclusive environment for your people, you are preventing them from realizing their greatest potential. And wouldn't you like it if they realize it in your organization instead of somebody down the road who is actively creating inclusion, who is actively, you know, listening to people and paying attention? And that's another piece of it. You've got to create a really inclusive communication. So you do all these things. You've got to be inclusive with your communication so that you're actively listening to people's lived experiences and what they bring to the table. Because if you say, oh, we want to hear all the voices, but every time someone tries to speak and you say, oh, no, that can't be true because it didn't happen to me, then you are completely undermining everything that you have been doing. And people understand that we're on a journey. You got to say, we're on a journey. We're going to mess up. We're going to do dumb things. We're still going to make stupid comments, but we're all trying. We're all trying to create change. We're all trying to make this work. And as long as you are trying, people will give you grace. It's when you're being hypocritical and not really honoring what you're saying and you're, you know, not walking the walk, or you're talking the talk, but when it's actual, you know, it's really time to for the rubber hit the road, you're not there. People see through that. I mean, people
easily
get it.
It's like, you know, we have this this radar that picks that up. Like, I can treat you politely, Jennifer, but I could also be condescending, or just that edge of tone just outside of awareness that you would pick up instantly. It's like, wait a minute, he doesn't really care what I'm saying. He's going through the motions. And so what message would you – I'm going to ask you to give three messages. Here's the first one. What message would you give someone in an organization that's just kickstarting their diversity program and they haven't pulled the trigger yet, they're about to do it in a month? What would be the message you'd give them?
A message for people who are just getting started, I would say manage your expectations. And I'm not saying keep them low. I'm saying keep them realistic for sure, like we've already talked about. And please, please create boundaries and balance within your own self, because burnout, diversity fatigue and burnout is a real thing. We just get tired of it. So you got to be mindful that you're not also, as an organization doing this new, just pulling in all of your people that are diverse, right? I mean, yes, we have these lived experiences, but at the same time, that doesn't mean we want to lead all of your initiatives. So I think you, I think you've got to be respectful of the time and what it's going to take to get these initiatives going, and think about, are you adding additional workload to employees who already have a lot to do? Are you making space? Is your org, you know, is the leadership supportive and providing what that person or persons need to lead this? And just, nice. Are you also making room for your own self-care? Because this work can be very frustrating, but it can also be amazing. It's just not often amazing and frustrating. It's just like a constant roller coaster of, this is great, and oh my gosh, I don't know if I can do this anymore. So you've got to take care of yourself, because some of these conversations are hard and they're draining, but they're important. And so you must take care of yourself.
All right. Really? So one last question. Someone that's, they've been doing diversity for a while, and let's say it's going fairly well. What message would you give them? They've been doing it for a while, it's going fairly well. And so what message would you give that person?
Oh, congratulations, man. Keep going. Keep looking at it. You know, just keep going, because if you're actually finding success and it's working, then I would just say continue to evaluate where you take your data points, monitor your metrics, you know, see if there's gaps that you have yet to fill. Because if it's going well, then you have opportunity to grow and make it bigger and better and more, whatever you want it to be. Because if people are bought in and they're actively progressing with you, then you really have such a great springboard for all kinds of innovative ways to continue to push your D&I initiatives, right? When you've got an active and engaged audience, the seeds are there. You can grow it into something incredible. So I would just say continue being innovative, looking for ways to grow your program and expand it. You know, it could be everything is great and now you want to add employee resource groups, or everything is going great and now you want to have like a multicultural, you know, celebration.
Nice.
or you know what I'm saying? Like participate in a local event or be more of a community partner, right? So there's a lot of ways that you can expand beyond even the walls of your own organization, is to get involved with local groups that support underrepresented communities, because then you'll learn more about them and more about how you can be a partner. And I'm a huge advocate of community support and involvement. I think organizations, workplaces that are actively supporting the community, that matters too. You know, people really are looking at your social contribution, and it's more than diversity and inclusion. It's what are you doing to be a community partner? And you can use your D&I to make that happen, or opposite, right? If you're already a community, you can use it to expand D&I.
So my advice to anybody going on this journey is document it well, because you'll want to look back at what worked well, what didn't work well, what you can do. And it's too difficult a battle to not document, because you will bleed for this, friends. So Jennifer, how can people get a hold of you?
Well, I am online, obviously. I have a website, janniferwheeler.com. I am also on LinkedIn, Jennifer Wheeler. You can find me there in those two places. I have recently developed an app, which is for individuals who are experiencing burnout or want to prevent burnout, and always developing D&I resources. I write a lot of custom curriculum for organizations. And so I do a lot of training. I would say I'm less about strategy and more about the education and support piece. Love around it. Resources. So I'm, as I said many times, I'm a former teacher, so that comes natural to me. Is thinking about what people need as far as the learning parts. But
all right.
Yeah, that's where Excellent. I am. I'm out there.
Jennifer, thanks so much for being on the show. Really enjoyed the conversation, and it's given me new insights into what this is all about. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.